everyone. Thanks again for checking out 2 for 1 at the Movies on whatsupwestman.ca. I'm Sean Cameron, and as always, I'm joined by Stephen Jackson of Toronto, and tonight we are talking about the movie Dark Shadows. Based on a gothic series that ran in America, Dark Shadows stars Johnny Depp as Barnabas Collins, a vampire who has re-emerged in the mid-70s post-Vietnam War. So we're talking about Dark Shadows as well. I have an interview with Craig Russell. Craig Russell is the director of the Outcast Theatre Company production of The Cripple of Inishman that will be playing this week at the Evans Theatre. So we have Craig Russell, we have Stephen Jackson, as always, from Toronto, and we are talking about Dark Shadows on this episode of 2 for 1 at the Movies.
Barnabas Collins. 2 centuries ago, I made Collinwood my home.
My love.
Until a jealous witch cursed me, condemning me to the shadows.
What have you done?
For all time.
What the hell is this?
He's coming. He's coming.
Hear me, future dweller. What is the year?
1972.
My beloved Collinwood.
The Collins family.
Who the hell is this?
I'm a vampire, madam.
Yeah.
He's not staying with us forever, is he?
I like him.
Oh, super fat.
Welcome home, Barnabas Collins.
How soon can the horses be ready?
We don't have horses. We have a Chevy.
What sorcery is this?
Reveal yourself, tiny songstress!
Hello, Barnabas. Remember me?
Witch.
You cursed me to be this hideous creature.
You may strategically place your wonderful lips upon my posterior and kiss it repeatedly.
What if I made you love me?
With what a spell?
With this.
I must admit, they have not aged a day.
She's for real?
Indeed.
If I can't have you, I'll destroy you. And your family.
Missed me. I shall restore the family business to its former glory.
Burn, baby. Burn.
Fight on, Barnabas. Fight on for us.
And fight I shall.
Love me.
Never. That was a regrettable turn of events.
Are you stoned or something?
They tried stoning me, my dear. It did not work.
Okay, welcome back to What's Up Westman 2 for 1 at the Movies. I am, as always, as I mentioned in the intro, joined by Stephen Jackson. And Stephen Jackson's the only person I know that snuck out of a double feature to go to a triple feature. Thanks once again for joining us, Stephen. How has your week been?
My week's been actually really great, actually. This week was the week I rented the theater. I gave my check in, so now it's all speed ahead for my production in August.
Excellent. And that's I'm blanking on the name right now.
Oh, sorry. Real Life Superhero.
Real Life Superhero. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
This week's been great. I'm going to be meeting with, I got a stage manager last week. I got a new, my graphic artist is all up on board and everything. The director for the show comes in this weekend. So yeah, everything's just kind of coming together.
Awesome. That's an exciting step, definitely. And one more step in the theater life, I guess you could say.
Yeah, very much so. Well, this was important. It's, you know, the minute you put down like that big check of money to rent something, you know, that you can't go back.
So, and I have to ask this, you know, obviously being somebody that's big into the theater as well, are you making the leap of faith and backing this yourself? Or?
Oh, completely. Yeah.
Wow.
But the thing is, though, is that I'm only putting in what I can put in. Like, I mean, you know, and even though also, like, it's a gentleman, myself, name is Stephen English, who we're doing the show together and everything, but we both are working on the financial part of things, but I know this is really a project I want to do, and so, you know, I'm putting my money behind it and saying this is what I want to do, and this I believe in this, so I figure that's the way, you know, the way to do it, and I'm not spending money that I don't have.
For sure, yeah, literally that the old adage, putting your money where your mouth is type thing.
I guess, yeah, and I think, you know, thankfully I can afford to do that right now, so it's good, but, you know, it's the thing that it's my passion, you know, so if I want to do it, I gotta be willing to put myself into it, so.
For sure, well, that's definitely a noble undertaking. I give you a ton of credit with that. As well, we have, you know, an interview this week. The listeners will be happy to hear. The Cripple of Inishman has just finished playing in Brandon. We have an interview with Craig Russell, who is the director of that show. And obviously the Outcast Theater Company, which Stephen knows I have a partial stake in. I guess you could say I'm one of the founders of it. They have a self-backed show that they just finished up at the Evans, The Cripple of Inishman. So we get a chance to talk to him up a little later in the show, so that's going to be a nice thing. And we also talked to him a little bit about his career as an author and not a follow-up book to The Black Bottle Man, but another book and some of his challenges with getting into the online publishing world.
So, oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's quite interesting to hear some of the challenges that the publishing world is going through in general right now, trying to see where the ebook craze is going to go, what it means to their, you know, their bottom line, and what it means to actually holding like a tangible paperback or hardcover book in your hand, which still has a lot of value to a lot of people. So,
well, and I think, you know, we're discovering this, that people are really cherishing that book feel of things. It's kind of like, you know, when we went to CDs and gone to digital, there's still lots of people who still hold on to vinyl.
For sure. And, yeah.
I think it's almost the same thing, you know. It's almost a nostalgia type thing. But I got to tell you, I like ebooks and everything, but there's something about holding a book in my hands that I still can't get over.
For sure, yeah. And a nice little shout out to your brother, because I know he has a vast array of books as you do as well. So I'm sure, yeah, there is something to be said for actually, you know, holding that book in your hand and being able to read it as opposed to reading it off a digital e-reader. But yeah, we get a chance to talk to him. It's neat to kind of hear some of his insight. But first of all, we'd like to mention, first of all, a thank you, as always, to CJ106.5, the Alternative Edge at Assiniboine Community College. And also, you're probably listening to us right now either at 7 a.m. on Sunday morning, so for the early birds, or 7 p.m. on Monday nights. They're actually going to syndicate our show on there, which is quite exciting. And I was just telling Stephen before we went on the air today about it, and the ability to reach a broader audience and an audience maybe at a different time of day. So kind of exciting.
Well, it's also great because it seems like, you know, like we know that we love doing this show, but it's nice that they're giving us a chance to again reach more people. But obviously other people like the show too, so, you know, thanks to all the people who are listening to us.
Awesome. And as always, you know, if you can't catch the show actually on CJ106, our podcasts are available on iTunes at What's Up Westman by searching What's Up Westman. As well, they're on our website weekly at whatsupwestman.ca, where Steven's got a couple of movie reviews coming up there this next couple of days as well that you can check out on there that kind of coincide with the podcast a bit. So it's neat to reach multiple genres, I guess you could say, with Steven's work on here. So I really appreciate that and look forward to people checking those out.
Yeah. Well, often like we get to talk about movies on here, but you know, sometimes it's nice to be able to read it too. So
absolutely. Looking at this week, we are looking at, I believe, the 8th movie that Tim Burton and Johnny Depp have collaborated on.
Wow. 8 movies, huh?
Yeah. Dark Shadows. I did my research. You'll be quite proud of me. I did my research. And I have the other 7 movies. Let's put Steven on the spot right now.
Oh, you're not going to do this. Oh, gee. I didn't get that ready. Okay.
Let's see. He had a movie in 2010 based on a Lewis Carroll novel.
Okay, so that's Alice in Wonderland.
Okay. He had a movie in 2007 based on a demon barber.
Oh, Sweeney Todd.
Excellent. He had an animated movie in 2005, a shorter animated movie starring Helena Bonham Carter as well.
The Corpse Bride.
Corpse Bride. Excellent. Willie.
What? What did you say?
Willie. Candymaker named Willie.
Oh my God. What's that one?
2005 movie. Eccentric candy maker named Willie.
Oh my God. Yes. Yes. Charlie and Chocolate Factory.
Excellent. He had a 1999 movie based on the story by Washington Irving.
Oh, Sleepy Hollow.
Excellent. 1994 black and white biopic.
Oh, Ed Wood.
There we go. And in 1990, dark romantic fairy tale starring Edward.
Oh, Edward Scissorhands.
There we go. If I had a buzzer or a bell right now, I got to give you credit. You named the other seven off with no.
You know, we were talking about prepping and something. I'm going, I had no idea what you were going
to
ask.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wanted to push the envelope, and I give you credit. You were bang on with all those. So this is the eighth collaboration of Johnny Depp and Tim Burton. If you can give the listeners a bit of what Dark Shadows is all about.
Well, Dark Shadows is an adaptation of the kind of the classic 60s soap opera called Dark Shadows. It lasted about 5 years. I haven't seen it myself. I really actually do want to check it out now after seeing this. Apparently you can get the episodes somewhere. But yeah, so it's a story of Barnabas Collins and his rather eccentric family. Barnabas Collins was, I guess, born in like the 1700s, I think it was. And he was cursed. His family was a curse placed on his family. He was stuck in a box for about, you know, 200, 300 years. And then he's unearthed in our day and time, and he's brought together with his present day family. And it's kind of about family and, I guess, the relieving of the curse, as it were.
For sure, yeah. He comes back early 70s, wasn't it?
Mid-70s, yeah.
Yeah, kind of post-Vietnam War era. He
In the age of the Carpenters, as it were.
In the age of the Carpenters, yes. It was a very different movie for me. Obviously, from the moment the movie starts, you can tell it has a Tim Burton feel.
Yeah, I think I know exactly what you mean. Like, there's a, you know, when you work with the same actor for eight films and you work with the same composer for all those eight films, probably too. I think Danny Elfman has done the music for every movie that Tim Burton has done, with exception of probably Sweeney Todd, because it's all Sondheim.
Absolutely. But,
So it's got this old familiar feeling amongst them. It's funny. I think probably you can remember the days when you saw a Tim Burton film. It was really quite odd and quirky. And now it's almost kind of like,
Yeah. And that's where I got to agree with you on that. I was watching the movie and you look right from that opening scene and, you know, the sweeping and the credits and everything. And even from there, you're looking, yeah, Tim Burton, right?
Yeah.
You know, just from that look that.
You're saying it's funny when we talk about this type of thing. There's a term that filmmakers use, which is called auteur. And it's pretty much the style of a filmmaker uses and such. And Tim Burton has a very, his own auteurship, as it were, his own style of film. And you can tell it when you see it. I mean, there's no question about this film that this film is, you know, Tim Burton's and not like James Cameron or not, you know, Spielberg. You know, you can tell it's a Tim Burton film. I mean, that works in some ways for this film, but it's a movie that's very uneven to watch. And we'll hopefully we can talk about that some more.
Sure. Yeah. Interesting to have, you know, Depp and Burton working together. Obviously they work together well and have for some time. It's Johnny Depp is probably one of, in my opinion, the best character actors. He or Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman, he's quite a, I mean, if you go back and look at Gary Oldman's earlier career with, like, you know, Immortal Beloved, Johnny Depp is turning into one of those types of actors too. But now I guess the big debate when you see a film like this with Johnny Depp is he just playing the same character over and over again? Like, is he just playing like Jack Sparrow, or is he just playing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. With the movie, I did see, you know, some Jack Sparrow, especially with the way he sounded.
Yeah.
And you also seen sort of the twistedness. You've seen a lot of Willy Wonka, I thought.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I like Johnny Depp, and I'll be honest, I had fun with this film, but I didn't see this as much of a challenge for Johnny Depp. I shouldn't say it's a letdown per se, but there wasn't a challenge for him in this role, I don't think. I mean, he's getting so used to playing that, you know, quirky guy who just kind of lets a line out that sounds funny type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of a flashback to, in a way, to the way maybe studios, especially, and I know these aren't studio films, but a lot of Tim Burton films, where, you know, studios would work with an actor and have like a 10 movie contract with the studio. And it's almost like, you know, they're obviously good friends and they're collaborating in that, but you almost get that feel like Johnny Depp and Tim Burton have to pump out a movie every 2-3 years.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. And I'm starting to wonder, like, this one kind of made me think that maybe there's like a freshness about their relationship that's starting to go away, and then maybe they have to come back after a while and really think about, you know, how they're making movies together and such like that. Or is it becoming too easy? You know what I mean? Is there a challenge that they both and both need for a film like this?
Yeah, definitely a dark film.
It is, but that's where kind of what I was saying about how this movie is really uneven. Like, you watch this movie, and it's got some great comedy to it, but then it's got some real big darkness to it. And sometimes that can work, but I'm not sure if it convinced me completely in this film. I mean, I found a lot of the storylines kind of just dropped off. Some things just happened too fast. Some things happened for way too long. So there was a pacing about this film that just didn't quite feel right.
Yeah, it had moments where it was just racing along, and, you know, especially when he opens up into the 1970s world, it really clicks along for a few minutes, but then it, like you say, it's like a vehicle that's sputtering.
Yeah, you know, and the storyline too, like it was like I hate to give away the ending of any kind, but, you know, all the coincidences that happen near the end, you know what I mean, like the trademarks of each of the family members just got boom, there it was, you know? And it also was like, well, there was no lead up to this barely, like, yeah,
throw it in your face and roll the credits.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I felt like this film is like, it sped up and cruised like into like sped to 90 all of a sudden near the end of the movie, and then it was kind of like, what, I don't understand, like, where'd this come from all of a sudden?
That's a good segue, actually, into talking a bit about the writing of the film. What did you think of the script itself?
I mean, there's, again, you know, some great funny moments. There were some interesting moments that the writer obviously had some fun with. I'm not sure if it, I mean, I'm very, I can be pretty easygoing sometimes when it comes to an adaptation of another product of some sort. I mean, I know we were talking about Battleship coming up this summer and everything, and that's a whole other story. But I'm not sure where that's going to go. But this one, I'm not convinced that it followed closely enough to the original stuff, the original text, which is the TV show. I don't know if it kind of felt like it wanted to do the horror of the old TV show with a mixture of like the update of the Brady Bunch movie.
Yeah,
I felt like it didn't know what it wanted to be. Did it want to be the comedy, or did it want to be this kind of gothic horror, and, you know, even campiness? I think it was trying to go for that campiness. I don't know if it got there though.
Do you think maybe writers are getting in Hollywood are getting almost kind of complacent? Like, you and I'll get with what I'm you know, I'll get to where I'm getting at with this. Yeah. But you look at a lot of films, and they're, in the last few years, they're really regurgitating some old storylines.
Or you're finding have you noticed the phenomenon of where two studios are making almost the same movie?
With the Snow White stuff, especially.
Snow White's, a number of years ago, was the Capote movies. Yeah, exactly. And now it's the vampire movies to some degree. But this, yeah. I don't think that's a regurgitation. I'm not sure if this is necessarily regurgitation. I think it's trying to bring something that was interesting at one time. But I just, you know, I think it's ironic enough that it's the Tim Burton Johnny Depp problem we have, which I think is that it's getting to feel old hat, the two of them together, and that they both need an idea that's fresh, a little newer type thing. And I feel like this one could have been that, but they really took the easy route and made it just, you know, just had a fun time together, and that's what they decided to make.
Right. Yeah. You look at Johnny Depp, and I know you and I have talked a bit about this movie, but with Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Oh, I've never seen Fear and Loathing.
Oh, really?
No, never. I've never seen it.
Okay. Well, I'll have to remember who I was chatting with, but it's a real deviation. It's twisted. It's Johnny Depp. You know, obviously the Hunter S. Thompson stories, but it's a real deviation from that Tim Burton, Johnny Depp style. And it's years old now, but it came along at the right time. And it was dark. It was a little twisted. It was funny. It was obviously, you know, I guess it was the prequel to the Rum Diaries.
Yeah.
But just it worked. But you look at Johnny Depp, like I say, and I don't get me wrong, I think he's a phenomenal actor, but he is getting complacent where he's regurgitating, you know, the Jack Sparrow voice for this character and a bit of Edward Scissorhands and Willy Wonka for the look. And
I don't want to offend you by any means, but he's now a parent. And you always wonder times thing when your life changes, when you change like that different stages of your life type thing. But I remember he said to recently, what, there was a movie he was starting to make, and he wanted to make sure that he had movies that his kids could see.
Right.
And I mean, and I'm not saying kids' movies can't be edgy. I'm going to hopefully talk to you later about a movie I saw recently that wasn't like that. But I'm wondering if he's kind of almost like slowing it down a little bit. And it's going to be interesting to see, because I'm sure you've heard what his next movie is going to be, right?
What's that?
The Lone Ranger.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Tonto.
Yeah.
And it's very, if you get a chance to see some of the pictures, it looks really incredible, the makeup and such. I don't know where the movie's going to go, but I'm hoping we'll get to see him make some of these smaller, edgier movies. Like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, even though I haven't seen it myself, you're right, it came at the right time. And it was a film that was never going to be the award-winning movie, but it's a movie that established a certain respect for him as an actor. I think that was more important for him.
Right. And you're right. It came along at the right time. With the Lone Ranger, obviously Armie Hammer in it as well.
Yeah.
As the Lone Ranger. Very interesting, just from the single shots that have come out for that movie. Very interesting costuming.
Yeah, very much so. And again, where it's going to count in this one is, where does this adaptation of this kind of classic story, where is it going to go? And I mean, you know, sometimes you have hits, like the Avengers, for instance. That was actually kind of a hit. They adapted from a comic book, and it worked out. This one, not so much. Where is Lone Ranger going to go? Hard to say. They did a great job with Alice in Wonderland. It was interesting. I think this, after this movie, you're going to see someone like Johnny Depp really take a step back and really reevaluate where his career is going to go. I mean, he's still got the Pirates of the Caribbean series to some degree. Like, the last movie made $1 jillion.
Yeah.
Even though it's like the fourth movie in the series and stuff. But I think it's time for Johnny Depp to kind of step back and really think about what roles and how he wants to see his career go from here. And that he can make more adult roles again. He doesn't have to do kiddie movies.
Are you going to go out on a limb and call that this one will be a flop?
I think it already has been called that, in fact, actually.
Yeah.
It made less than $30 million opening weekend, which, you know, $30 million during the spring is good, but not for a summer movie, especially not right after the Avengers making like $200 and then $100 million. And it's still got to cover its $150 million budget, so it's not going to hit anywhere near that. Unless, you know, some miracle overseas market saves it, which... I just read recently, we were talking about John Carter from our John Carter movie.
Right, yeah.
Well, apparently it's actually made a bunch of its money back, actually. But
been overseas.
It's all been overseas. So maybe Dark Shadows are in an overseas market. They do like Johnny Depp overseas, but it's going to be a bit before we see. I think he seriously has to kind of step back and figure out what movies he needs to make. And the same with Tim Burton, too. I think Tim Burton's in that same boat, too, where, you know, he's made these movies that, you know, are appealing, but... where does he want to see his career go type thing. I mean, he's one of those directors who's never been really respected amongst the award-winning shows and stuff like that. Like, he's never been up for Oscars or Golden Globes and stuff like that. So, you know, both of them need to step back and reevaluate where they're going.
Who do you think adapts quicker and for the most part better, Depp or Burton?
It's a tough case because both of, you know, the great thing about both these people is that they have reinvented themselves a few times. So, I mean, you know, it's going to be a toss-up who comes first. But I can see Johnny Depp probably going first because I think it's easier for an actor, because an actor can go through, like, maybe three movies a year, where a director, well, he's got maybe one movie over 2 years. So I think you'll see Johnny Depp be the one who bounces back first. But, you know, it'll give time for Tim Burton to kind of really rethink himself and where he's going to go.
What about other cast? You know, we have Michelle Pfeiffer there, Helena Bonham Carter. Both Tim Burton staples as well, I guess you could say. You know, Michelle Pfeiffer way back to the Batman days.
Yeah. And it's funny, I was in the theater when I was thinking that. I went, oh my God, this is like the first movie she's done on Tim Burton since Batman Returns. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, and Helena Bonham Carter has been in a pile of Tim Burton movies, but...
Yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer, I think, did very well with this movie in some degree. I think she's the one who kind of really stood out for me in this movie. Even though she really had a small role, but she kind of fit into the little quirky world and made it work. Helena Bonham Carter, you know, I tried to like her in this movie a bit, but she just kind of disappeared to me. And I'm not sure if you felt that way, too. I felt she just disappeared into the background sometimes.
Right, and, you know, she is a strong actress.
Oh, my God. Like, if you go back to, like, last year with The King's Speech, I mean, she can do – she's an amazing actress. But I don't feel she had enough in this movie to go any further. And obviously, they want her for a sequel, so.
Yeah.
that didn't give away the ending. But anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about some of the other guys we have going on? Not a lot of hugely recognizable names. You know, we do have Jackie Earl Haley as Willie Loomis. We've got, what was the girl's name?
Chloe Grace Moretz.
Right. The main kind of temptress.
Yeah. And then there was Eva Green who played the temptress. Eva Green came out of the last James Bond movie, I think, made two Bond movies ago or something, I believe. And Chloe Grace Moretz was in Kick-Ass. And she also did the American adaptation of Let Me In, the vampire film.
Okay.
Yeah, so she's done a little bit and stuff. I'm a big fan of Jackie Earl Haley, actually. He's one of those actors I like to follow sometimes.
Right.
Because he was in the original Bad News Bears back in the 70s.
Oh?
Seriously, he was. And he hadn't done a movie for almost like 30 years. And his comeback movie was, Little Children with Kate Winslet.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And that was his comeback movie, and he ended up getting an Oscar nomination for the movie. He was just brilliant in this movie. So he's kind of like this huge comeback kid that come back for like 30 years. So, you know, most people just disappear after, you know what I mean? And he came back. He also did, he's done a few other movies since then as well, too. But if you're Little Children, if you get a chance to see it, it's just a wonderful movie. And his character is so complex. Jackie, he plays a pedophile. And arrested, who's just been freed from jail, or he's just come out of jail, he's served his time, he comes back to this small community, and he's just demonized by everyone there. And he's taunted by his own sins, I guess, as it were. And, you know, if you get a chance, he's just brilliant. There's a wonderful scene where he desperately needs, he's just being so tempted by his inner desires, for, you know. And he goes to a swimming pool. And he goes into the water. Someone finally notices he's in there with the kids. And all the kids stream out of the pool and leave him in the water.
Right.
It's a beautiful scene if you ever see it. But he's a wonderful actor.
And he was the one that kind of stood out for me for his career. And it was a recent movie, but it was Rorschach in...
Watchmen.
The Watchmen.
Yeah, again, wonderfully complex role. He chooses good roles. This one, I mean, he's good in this movie. I just don't think it's strong. It's one of those movies where the sum of all the parts didn't quite equal up.
Yeah. You
know, great actors who could have had great characters, but no one had enough to do to really warrant anything.
Right, right. We're gonna switch gears a bit here. Talk a bit about the, obviously we've talked a little bit about Tim Burton films and, yeah, and what you can expect there. The art of this film, I seen with Johnny Depp especially, a lot of the kind of old Nosferatu Dracula.
Oh yeah, very much. I mean, I think they really plumbed deep into every Dracula vampire movie they could find to get some of the images and stuff. But there was a really funny sequence in the middle where that he tries to find a place to sleep, and he's in, like,
okay, yeah,
does it in crooked he can find. I thought that was really funny, because you don't really get to see that very often in vampire movies. But the art design in this movie is really quite pretty. But again, it's very Tim Burton. Can you imagine if Tim Burton made a movie that was all like sunshine and daisies and
yeah. Yeah.
Can you imagine? Okay, we both saw The Lorax.
Right, yeah.
Him making The Lorax.
Yeah, yeah. there'd be kids having nightmares for years to come type thing.
But I think that'd be just fascinating. And of course, he'd probably win all the awards for it, like after making all these great gothic films, and then he'd win for this, you know, sunshine and lollipop, you know.
I am glad that Johnny Depp, you know, obviously looked at some of the Nosferatu stuff for Dracula, and a little bit of an element as far as the look, it had the Dracula or vampire character had a feel of the 30 Days a Night type vampires to me in a way. I am glad that they avoided any kind of Twilight reference or anything along that line.
Oh, as someone who sat through the movie Vampires Suck, I was in a really small town. It was the only movie playing, so I had to go see it, and I regret it. But you know, yeah, I'm glad they stuck away from the Twilight references, especially with the young girl too. I was a little worried they have like some romance for her with, like, you know, a human boy or something. I don't know, but I'm glad they stuck away from that, because we've still got one more Twilight movie to go. So
for sure, have you? Just on a completely side note,
yeah,
have you ever been the only person in a theater watching a movie?
Almost. I did go see one movie. I went to see, what movie was it? There was one other person. It was me and one other person in the theater. It was a friend who I went with.
Oh.
So they were like, we were the only ones in the theater. I'm trying to remember what the movie was, though. It could have been Before Sunrise.
Okay, yeah.
Or Before Sunset. It could have been very well have been that movie, but I can't remember for sure if that's it.
That's
but,
the George Clooney one, right?
No, Before Sunset is Richard Linklater.
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
Delphi. And it was one of those movies that we both really got into. We were like bawling at the end, and there's like no one around us.
Right, right. So, I was George Clooney. I was thinking From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, right.
Yeah. You know, another reference to the sun setting, but... I did have the experience, and this was a couple of weeks back, and I wanted to mention it. I went with my day job, I guess you could say, my work, went to Weyburn for some work. I was there for a little over a week, and
yeah,
I seen Mission Impossible 4, which was still in the theaters, but I was the only person in the theater. It was the strangest experience. I went in there thinking, you know, okay, it's the 9 o'clock show. I paid my cheap rate for the Tuesday night or whatever. It was $7 to go see it. And I literally was the only person for the entire screening. It was a surreal feeling. And at the end, you know, I get up and I kind of felt like I had to shut the lights off in the theater when I left, like
clean up your mess and like,
yeah, clean up my popcorn that I've spilled on the floor and that type of thing. But if you, I had wondered, you know, obviously in Toronto, you get rare opportunity that you would be the only person in there. But I wondered maybe if you'd ever had that experience.
You know, sometimes if you're fortunate with some of the smaller movies, sometimes you can get that to happen. So, but yeah, it's very rare. This is like one of those rare occasions. And again, I took a friend with me, so it was two of us kind of taking the movie in together. And so we didn't really care that there was no audience around. But if you're strictly by yourself, it says the importance of how much an audience counts to your movie. Like, for instance, I couldn't imagine seeing The Avengers by myself in the theater.
Right, yeah.
Anything I said. Like, there was this, like, when I went to see The Avengers, and I love comic books, it was like I completely joined, like, psychically linked with all the other comic book fans in the theater.
Yeah.
All would awe and ooh at the exact same time, like, all those little small little comic book references.
Yeah.
And I would miss that.
Yeah, it was kind of like the Force, eh? You know, all of a sudden.
Like the geek, you know?
Yeah, the geek force comes out in you. Speaking of the Avengers, we'll do a quick rundown of what's playing at the Empire this week.
Yeah.
We got Marvel's The Avengers in 3D. Dark Shadows, obviously what we've been talking about today. The Dictator opened up over the other day.
Oh, did it? Oh, good.
The Dictator is in theaters. That's the Sacha Baron Cohen Eastern, Middle Eastern dictator comedy. It's going to be interesting. I think I'm going to check that out this week. The Avengers, just the regular 2D version.
Yeah.
The 5-year engagement, still holding on. Pirates, Band of Misfits, holding on. And still holding on, and for quite some time now, so it obviously has a bit of staying power in Brandon, is American Reunion.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, obviously the Dictator opening now, that'll lots of people will be going to see that probably this weekend. It's the big movie this weekend, I think. So.
Yeah, and I think it will punch American Reunion right out of the theater event, you know, once it has a good solid week under its belt. Did see American Reunion, and it, you know, on a completely quick note, it was fun. It was a
sometimes that's all you can expect from a movie. It's just
yeah. It was fun. It was a decent way to wrap up the franchise, and that's all you could really expect from it. I don't think
they wrap up the franchise.
I think so. Unless, you know, there's a call for a need for more money. I think it is the end of the franchise. So, what I'm going to do now though is I'm going to take a quick second. I'm going to flip over some audio here. Complete change of gears, but I'm going to flip over some audio and we'll roll with our Craig Russell interview. So just take a listen. Craig Russell was the director of the Outcast Theater Company's The Cripple of Inishman that had been playing in Brandon this past week. And he talks a little bit about that and his book as well. So I'm going to flip over to that and we'll be right back after that. Cripple of Inishman. What is the show about? What'll audiences expect out of it?
It's this amazing black comedy about people in a tiny community, which I think we can all relate to. And they are so bad to each other. So much of the humor comes out of the way that they speak to each other. The fellow who wrote the play, Martin McDonagh, is from the United Kingdom, and this play has been performed in the London National Theatre and, you know, the New York Broadway and Los Angeles, and, you know, it's just this, it's full of wonderful phrases and words, and it's really juicy.
For sure.
So I would say lots of laughs.
Excellent. The Outcast Theater Company, obviously, something near and dear to my heart, something I've been involved with since its inception. What kind of made you folks decide this was the show you wanted to do? And
well, our producer is Christine Penner. And for a number of months, the Outcasts read a variety of plays looking for something that they thought would be the best thing that they could bring to Brandon. And so they read some other plays by McDonagh, and this was the one that they thought best. And then they figured out what the cast would be. And it was at that point that they invited me to come and be director. And I just feel like someone's handed me the keys to this Ferrari, because, you know, I'm just stepping right into a terrific script and a great cast, and we just put the gas pedal down and have gone, like, you know, just speeding down the highway on this one.
For sure. Obviously, like you had mentioned there with cast, some names, Brandon, people will recognize?
Yes. That's for sure. Well, Peter Buehler, who's been in many productions, Christine Penner, Nancy Miller, And you know, it's it's cast sort of rich with their own personal humor. So you just layer that on top of what's in the script.
As far as the show, when are the show times and how can people get tickets?
8 p.m. This coming Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So that's the 16th, 17th, and 18th. It's at the Evans Theater. And tickets are available from myself and any of the cast members. And also at the door. And they're $15.
Excellent. And lastly, I guess... If you were an audience member coming into this show, what are you going to walk away feeling? What's something that's going to stick with you as an audience member?
What are people going to come away feeling? I think they're going to come away feeling that live theater gives you something that no other entertainment medium gives you. You know, you go to a movie or you watch TV. It's exciting and it's entertaining, but live theater is so human and immediate that you can go to every one of these three shows and get more and more out of it.
Excellent. And lastly, I'm asking this completely on my own accord because I'm a fan of yours. With the Black Bottle Man, is there a follow-up? Do you have another novel in the works or anything you could share yet? Or
I have a second novel that hasn't found a home yet, and I'm working on a third. So you know it's the publishing world is having a lot of challenges these days with them trying to figure out how the ebook stuff works, and I want to find a publisher who I'm comfortable with, and my previous publisher was great. It's just that the second novel really isn't the kind of thing that they publish at all. Like sure. The first one was a young adult novel, and this one isn't, and that's just not something that they step into. My editor, you know, really liked it and wanted to go with it and was trying to get the publisher to, you know, sort of step out of their zone to take it. But the publisher says, no, you know, we know our strengths and we don't want to try and do things that we're not good at. So.
Okay, as I mentioned there, we had Craig Russell, who was the director of The Cripple of Inishman, and hopefully the Outcasts have another show in the works here. I'm not tipping our hat by any means, but I do hope there is another show coming to Brandon here. You had mentioned in the opening there, Stephen, you had a movie that you checked out this past week that, you know, you had a neat experience to actually meet the actor, meet the director, that type of thing as well. If you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this past weekend, after I'd saw Dark Shadows on, it was Saturday night, I went to see, it's a wonderful film festival called the Next Wave Film Festival. It is done through the Toronto International Film Festival, and it's teen movies picked by teens. So the entire people picking the movies are all teenagers too. So they picked films they want to see. And the last film I got to see from this film festival, I only wanted to see the one really that badly, but it was called Fat Kid Rules the World. It's directed by Matthew Lillard, who it's his first time directing, but you'll know his name because he was in the Scooby-Doo movies. He played Shaggy. He recently was in the Descendants as well, too. He's mostly known as an actor. He actually did a Kenneth Branagh film, Love, Sleepers, Lost, a number of years ago, too. But so, yeah, he's directing it, and a wonderful young actor named Jacob Wasaki, who I've got to know a little bit in movies. Last year, he was in a wonderful movie called Terry, starring with John C. Reilly. He also was in a TV show called Huge, which was Nikki Blonsky's TV series on ABC Family. It didn't last very long, but it was about a group of teens at a fat camp.
Okay.
And so, so I got to see this movie, and it was, a unique experience because both Matthew Lillard and Jacob Wasaki were both there in attendance to answer questions. I didn't get a chance to ask one, unfortunately. There was actually quite a number of questions coming out. But this movie, it's called Fat Kid Rules the World, and it's a wonderful, wonderful film. It's one of those movies you just live for because so often we get a lot of teenage movies that are just kind of dripping with like sentimentality and just don't seem to feel at all real. And this one really hit home for me. The story revolves around a young boy who, a larger gentleman, who befriends this other boy who convinces him to play drums in a punk rock band. Well, Jacob Wysocki's character doesn't know anything about punk music, doesn't know how to play the drums or anything. and he ends up, and this, but the neat thing around the story is that this other kid is dealing with addictions to drugs and such. And he's living on the street. It's quite a very interesting story. And the father of Jacob Wysocki's character, his name is Troy. The father is played by Billy Campbell, who you may remember from a number of other TV shows and movies. Once and Again, I think, is one his main TV show he did. But he's wonderful too. He's a wonderful father figure, kind of a military dad who kind of really, you start to hate him at the beginning, but then you start to really understand where he comes from and that he's built on this complete level of fairness that is it's just remarkable to kind of imagine. But so it's, the story is really about these two teenagers who kind of bring out something in each other. Troy, who's larger, really grows and becomes his own person. He finally finds his voice. The other kid learns about, you know, being able to trust people and that there are people out there who will care for him, because he really feels like that's not something that's possible. So it's just a wonderful movie. I hope I can direct people to the website. The interesting thing about this movie is, as of Saturday, I was in the category of less than 1,000 people who've seen this movie. Even though this movie won the Audience Award a number of weeks ago in the South by Southwest down in, I think, California. Okay, they won the Audience Award for this movie. So it's starting to get some steam, but it doesn't have almost any backing behind it. It's got a list long of producers, and it's all small people. So they are doing a campaign on their website to raise money for distribution of this film. So the website is fatkidrulesthemovie.com. And so, you know, if you get a chance to take a look at the site, you can see a little bit about the film. They've got some a trailer there. I'm not sure if it's ever going to make Brandon. It'd be really nice if it did, because I think this is the type of movie that, you know, I think families should really take their kids go see, especially their teenagers and such. And it's going to be doing a tour across the United States during the, I think it's the Van, almost, it's like a skateboard festival type thing.
Okay,
it's gonna be showing, it's going to be showing the movie along the way, just to get it some momentum and stuff, because there's a lot about punk music and in this movie as well too. So I just really wanted to promote that movie. I had a chance to talk to the director really briefly at the very end, and I told him about our podcast. I told him that hopefully I get a chance to mention his movie. So so if you do get a chance to ever see this movie, it's just a wonderful film and you won't regret it. It's just a beautiful film.
Excellent. It's nice to see them, even though they don't have the big financial backing behind it, all the producers and the director and obviously actors as well take a lot of ownership in trying to get a North American and then hopefully, you know, a worldwide reach out of it.
I mean, and this is one of the situations where it's such a small movie, and it's just, you know, this time of year, it's, you know, all the summer big movies and everything. It's, you know, this is the time of year when I tell people, you know, it's great to see the big movies in the theater like the Avengers, but take a look and try and find those small movies, because you might find just something just as rewarding as all the special effects, you know. I went online to look at the Evans Theater, and I guess it's closed for the summer, so unfortunately a lot of the small movies in Brandon aren't going to be around.
It's closed down, and hence the reason, you know, our outcasts there were able to get some performance dates in there, so that it kind of switches seasons there a bit. But you know, the folks that run the movies over there do bring in some good movies over time, and you know, we look forward to them getting back to that. So that's very cool. What was the website again?
It's Fat Kid Rules the Movie. Rules as in RULES. Okay. RulesTheMovie.com.
Excellent. Well, I'll put a link for that in our show notes as well, in case people want to take a look for that, which, you know, is kind of neat. And it's neat you're one of, you know, the 1,000 people that have seen this movie, right? To be in on the ground floor of that.
It's a remarkable feeling to say that, you know, you're one of the very first people to see a movie. And And even better as a movie, I think I really believe in really very much about this movie. And I, you know, when you see movies like this that are very inspirational and but tell truthful stories, I feel like it's an amazing feeling to see it. And it's amazing to see people involved in it who are so dedicated to the movie too, that they're going to go around and be a part of these little small film festivals or small little tours just to get people to see the movie.
Awesome. So yeah, check it out. FatKidRulesTheMovie.com. To hopefully get a little bit bigger reach for that. Speaking of reach, I was just looking at Box Office Mojo, and The Avengers has now moved into ninth spot overall for the top grossing movie of all time. It just has passed in the last 3 days, basically, Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. So, and it's trailing fairly close behind Pirates of the Caribbean, the On Stranger Tides version. So...
Yeah,
that's something. In the top 10, there's two Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And you know, it's just going to continue to move up. Like, it's going to pass. Oh, actually, right now on my screen it says it's 13th, but it's going to pass 12, 11, and probably up to about 8, probably by the end of the weekend.
Yeah,
like there's almost it's probably going to make about another 50 million this weekend. If it holds up to where it is at, but yeah, it's going to make its way up there
for sure. On that note, we look like we've come to the end of our run for this week. So once again, I want to thank Stephen for joining me again and sharing. You know, obviously, FatKidRulesTheMovie.com. Check that out, and also sharing Dark Shadow with us. So thank you once again, my friend, for joining me tonight, albeit from miles away.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I mean, I enjoyed it. And again, we'll see what we bring to you next week.
Awesome. And on that note, once again, thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Jill Ferguson and the great folks at CJ 106.5, Assiniboine Community College Radio, for allowing us to be on the air. As always, you can check out our podcasts on iTunes by searching What's Up Westman. As well, our podcasts are on weekly on whatsupwestman.ca, where we feature arts, entertainment, lifestyle, and culture happenings in Brandon. Thanks so much for checking us out. Hope to talk to you again real soon.